The biggest battle we will ever have to face is the battle between you and you. It's the battle of taking your mind to that limit and then breaking through. On the Mindful Experiment podcast, we will share concepts, universal laws, and interviewing individuals who have done just that, who have gone through the dark times and through those moments, allowed their light to shine bright. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Manzo, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and taking this journey with me as we discover different avenues to break through those limits, expand your reality, and evolve into the person you desire to be. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
A word from our sponsor. A wise lion, distraught by the condition of the world and its people, tutors a human student about the part we all play in, creating and preserving balance and harmony on Mother Earth, an exploration of the true nature of the soul and spirituality. The lion's wisdom will move you to see the world around you differently. The first people get a 10% off on paperbacks. Follow the purchase link on umarshankari.com and use promo code MIND10. Hey guys, you're listening to The Mindful Experiment. As this week, we had an awesome interview discussing the power or influence in writing, how you can use writing for influence. We had the distinct honor of interviewing Carla D. Bass, a Colonel Air Force who's retired. Carla, who's a retired Colonel Air Force, served 30 years of active duty and another 12 with a federal agency working directly with general officers and civilian equivalents, ambassadors, congressional delegations, and foreign dignitaries. She wrote letters for the executive level signature, reports for senior military leaders, hundreds of personnel appraisals, nominations for awards, congressional fellowships, and other competitive packages. She's composed elevator speeches, talking points, and executive correspondence, many of which were sent to Congress and the White House. In all instances, each word and every second of the audience's time counted. Carla developed her writing methodology and taught thousands of Air Force personnel for 15 years. Carla served in the locations to include Bulgaria, Germany, Korea, Hawaii, and Washington, D.C. She lives with her husband, Lynn Reeves, in the Virginia countryside. Carla has a unique look at things when it comes to writing. Even after going through this interview, it kind of has spiked my interest to use writing more as a way of influence compared to just myself using my voice or using a video and those types of things. And she'll talk about the directness of how choosing which word to which and how to make sure that your point is very direct and straightforward. I really had a blast on this show. I really recommend getting a pen and paper. She really brings a lot out there. And I'm actually looking forward to, as I said in the podcast, to read her book because I know it's going to help change me and I know it'll help with you also. So, with no further ado, here is Carla D. Bass. Carla, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm excited to have you on. I mean, a retired Air Force, I give you a colonel, a retired Air Force. That's even more impressive for me because I'm afraid of heights and so forth. So with all that, I'm really excited to have you. I was like, oh, wow, retired Air Force. I'm like, there's probably stories there. Holy cow. But very, very fascinated with that. And then, but the other part too is I'm big into influence. It's something that I study a lot in the sense of when I speak and when I do workshops and so forth. And I love how you talk about the right to influence in your book and so forth. But before we get into all that, I was curious to know, like, how did you get passionate and how did writing become interest to you?
I walked the dog backwards, and in a way it all stems back to my own father, who was a retired Air Force colonel himself. When he commissioned me, he gave me three very brief pieces of advice. The first was stay focused on the job / don't get caught up in office politics. The second one was keep your sense of humor. And the third is what led me to where I am today. The third was always take care of your people and they will take care of you. So I instilled all three of those. And how I began this journey was when I was a major. That was the first time I'd gotten back into a supervisory position. So you've got good people. What do? You compete your good people for awards. So I'm submitting all my folks and they are regularly winning. Well, you know, I didn't think anything about it because great people, great stories, and so there you have it. But when I moved on to my next assignment, I was a lieutenant colonel in charge of 480 people. It was a squadron in Hawaii. When I took command, it was the most losing unit in the island for the statewide professional awards. These were quarterly and annual awards, and it was almost a joke. We always lost. The tragedy is, it's not because they deserved to lose, it's because these wonderfully talented young people had supervisors who couldn't tell their stories. They couldn't write winning nomination packages. So no matter how hard you worked, how many great initiatives you launched, if your boss couldn't convey that, you lost the award. So I took 3 days personal vacation, sequestered myself in a beach cabin, and I analyzed my own writing. Carla, you were winning before. How do you write? What do you do? And how do you teach others? So out of that came a very small, I call it a tactical, very rough little 28-page handbook. I taught my guys how to write, and we started sweeping the awards. Then the other units on the island said, "Hey, Colonel Bass, can you teach us too?" Well, you know what flabbergasted me, because all my only concern were my 480 people, you know, take care of your people. I ended up teaching that little one-hour workshop for the next 15 years to thousands of people, because the need was so vacuous back then. And that was before Twitter and Facebook and before our educational curricula stopped teaching this kind of writing. So it was from that assignment in Hawaii that I came to realize that powerful writing changes lives. That's my battle cry now. Years after that, people would stop me at Defense Intelligence Agency or in the hallways of the Pentagon, and they'd say, "Colonel Bass, if it weren't for, I wouldn't have." And that's why I am so passionate about sharing this with people.
That's awesome. What is it you think about writing, or is there a certain method, or is it just writing in general that makes it so powerful and makes it the opportunity to influence?
Okay, I'm going to ask you to, and your listeners, to imagine an inverted triangle, because it's a two-part process. You can call it a methodology. I call it strategies and tools. The large part of the inverted triangle, this is where you develop the strategies to tell your story. You get the facts and the details, you identify the impact, you figure out how to analyze to deliver your message. And as you come down to the bottom, the pointy end of that inverted triangle, That's where you apply what I invented in that little beach cabin, my word sculpting techniques. I have 10 word sculpting tools where you take your rough draft and you hone and you chip and you really mold it into something that's concrete and hard-hitting. So it's the inverted triangle, the strategies paired with the word sculpting tools.
Very cool. And these, you said you had 10 tools that are you use to sculpt like an actual sculpture, chiseling away. Is that kind of the concept?
Yeah. Exactly. So when I teach this in my workshops, I tell the audience, these are interactive, really fun workshops. I say, poof, you are now a sculptor. You're sitting in Paris. You've got the hammer and chisel and the smock, and you are facing a 10-foot chunk of marble. Because you are a master sculptor, you know instinctively what form is hiding inside that marble. So you go chisel, 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 and pretty soon you have all the scraps and remnants on the floor, and there's your statue. It's the same thing for word sculpting. After you get the initial draft, Okay, you've got your gut dump, as I describe it. You take these 10 tools, these 10 tools, you know, and you apply, and one by one by one, you chisel away the redundancies, the wasted words, the bureaucratic blather, and all of a sudden, you've got yourself a crisp, pristine, focused, and compelling message.
That's pretty cool. Now,
you want me to give you a sample?
Yeah, go for it. Why not?
Okay, so one of my tool, and I do this with, they're all lighthearted. This Right to Influence is the book. It's not a boring textbook. It's lighthearted, it's fun. And so one of the word sculpting tools, I call it verbs are your friends. Rely on them. And so what happens, in fact, here we go. Imagine right now a hard-boiled egg. Got it? Hard-boiled egg?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now make that hard-boiled egg 6 feet tall and focus on the yolk. The yolk is the verb. And what we do in contemporary sloppy business writing is we smother the verb in so much unnecessary stuff. It consumes space, it consumes time, and it makes for a very horrible product. So over to you. Instead of saying take you up on, give me one word that says take you up on. I take you up on your offer. I
take up on my offer. Choose another word.
What's one verb that equates to take you up on?
Take you up on. English is
I take you up on your offer. I accept.
Oh, gotcha. I accept. Sorry, that's what. Okay.
Okay. All right. That's okay. You want one more?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Provide answers. What's the verb that's hiding in there?
You provide answers, or I provide answers, or
you get rid of the word "provide." It's answer.
Ah, gotcha.
Instead of make an inquiry, it's ask. Instead of make progress, it's progress. Instead of arrive at a solution to a problem, it's resolve a problem. So you can shred away all of this surrounding white stuff and cut straight to the verb, and that makes for a crisper product.
So you say that when people, like the average person, business, you say contemporary business, when they write, is it just they're not being so direct or straightforward? They're adding more word or fluff or things like that in it?
Yes, I don't think. Well, one, I think maybe it's bad habit because it's so, this I call it bureaucratic blather, is so pervasive. They haven't been exposed, the schools aren't teaching this, they haven't been exposed to write crisp, write clean. You don't have to have a discussion, you can discuss. Doesn't have is lax. Just write with a little bit of precision. And you see the same thing. Another one of my tools is called Don't Hog Space. And so here's one for you. What's one word that equates to day to day?
Day to day, like actions and stuff?
Daily. Day to day is daily. In addition is also. Point of view is perspective. So if you can go from many words down to one, that's another way of honing your writing so that it's not so verbose, that it's snappier and it conveys the message a lot more effectively.
I can definitely see that. Go ahead.
Yeah, those are two of the 10 word sculpting tools.
Do you want to share all 10, or you want to leave it for the listeners to have to read your book and get all of them?
How much time do we have?
we got a good half hour, 40 minutes left. So
all right. Well, okay. Well, I'll talk to one more. Cool. Useless words. That's actually the number one of the 10 tools. It's find and carve out useless words. Examples of useless words. Provide with. So you often hear, I provide you with the opportunity to, or I provide you with whatever. The point here is with is always 100% not needed when you say provide, because provide is it's an action verb. It's a transitive verb, and I'll hit you with a little bit of grammar. It takes a direct object. I provide you the opportunity. I provide you a pen. I provide you a car. You don't ever have to say with. So that sloppy writing costs you the space before with, then W-I-T-H, that costs six spaces. And that, let me hit you with just my fundamental principle here. Whether you're writing fact or fiction, whenever you put thoughts to whatever the vehicle is, you're constrained by two things. You're constrained by time, because everybody is busy. Knock, knock. Here's a question. Knock, knock. You know knock, knock jokes?
Yes, I do. Who's knock, there? Knock.
Okay. That's the wrong answer. Why? Because everybody is busy. So today's answer to knock, knock, it's not who's there. It's what do you want? So okay. Be courteous to your audience or to your reader. Get your message across and get off the stage. So the writer is constrained by time. Knock, knock, who's there? I'm busy. And you're also very often constrained by space. So whether it's the above the fold space on a web page, or if it's something that limits you to X number of words or X number of spaces, or if it's a government form or another corporate form that actually has an area on a page marked out, you know, where you are physically constrained, that's all the space you're allowed. Those are the two constraints. So the person who learns to leverage the reader's time and the available space the best often wins. How's that for a mouthful?
That's awesome. I'm learning a lot just listening to you with everything. I think correct me if I'm wrong, it's just being more direct or straightforward and more specific. Like, just instead of a bunch of words, we get down to just, you know, shorten the message up, be more simple with it, and pretty much that's where don't waste
other people's time. That's part of it. That's a big part of it. The other part, though, and this is one of my strategies as opposed to a word sculpting tool. One of the strategies is don't accidentally bury your golden nugget. So in this again, everything comes back into that time and space formula. The golden nugget, what I mean by that is if you have only 3 minutes of the audience's time, what is the most important thing you need to convey, and convey that first? Again, in bureaucratic and corporate writing, we have gotten into this really bad habit of having to set the background, give a very long lead-in, set the context before you get to the main point. The problem is people spend so much time and verbiage in setting the context, you lose the reader. The fish, you have to hook the audience. The fish smells the hook, and you haven't gotten to the worm, and so you lose the audience, and the fish swims away. So it's writing concisely, it's writing compellingly, but it's getting the messages prioritized. You kind of have to triage the amount of space and the amount of time you have, and put the most important part up top.
That's very interesting. Do you want, when you're speaking or doing stuff, you want the golden nugget to be, if it's short, you want it to be up front. Is it because of how our memory works, where we most of the time remember the first or the last thing and we kind of lose out in the middle?
Yes, that's part of it. And that's probably 50-50. But the thing is, if you risk not delivering your key message at all if you bury it in the middle because of time and space. You know, you're a busy person. All of your listeners are busy people. You're only going to go spend so many seconds on an email, spend so many seconds listening to a movie trailer. You've got to be able to get the message across as soon as possible.
That makes sense. Now, is that the same kind of advice you give to somebody who is, let's say they're speaking for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or 45, or is there more time and play with that?
Oh, no. I once, in fact, it was fairly recently, had a 15-minute opportunity to address 200 business entrepreneurs. That was a very valuable opportunity for me. I spent hours outlining how am I going to use every second of those 15 minutes. I mean, hours working on that 15-minute presentation. And then, because it was a hard 15 minutes, do not exceed 15 minutes, I actually verbally practiced it out loud over and over and over and over again to make sure I hit the mark. I almost talked myself hoarse practicing that so much. But that's another example where every second of that presentation counted. Every second was golden.
That's awesome. Can anyone write and learn to write, or is it just some people have the knack and tenacity and some don't?
No, it's easy to learn. It's just folks haven't been exposed to it. When you're going through high school and you're going through college and even grad school and higher level academics such as in the military, the threshold seems to be give me a 5,000 word paper, a 10,000 word paper, a 400 word paper, and the natural inclination is to think a little bit of meat and a lot of fluff and I can make that threshold. The problem is that's developing exactly the wrong muscle for coming out into the real world, because out here business entrepreneurs are desperately seeking people who are able to write with this kind of focus, precision, and by using the thought process I just described in academia, you're using 8 years developing bad habits. So I really wish I could get this into the school system so that students could come out much better prepared to excel in the job market.
That's awesome, and I hope that happens because I know that can definitely be needed, very much so. What are things you see that are, like, let's say entrepreneurs and so forth, what are the biggest mistakes do they make when it comes to writing that you see? Or is it more of like a general kind of thing?
No, it's. I think the biggest mistake is they're afraid to be direct. They couch. I go back to all of the lead-in stuff. This here, well, here's the horse before the cart. Is another. It's kind of similar to the golden nugget thought, but they bury the main message way deep in the communication. And folks just don't have the time or the patience to get to it. There's nothing wrong with being direct. You don't have to tiptoe with the audience or with your reader. In fact, readers appreciate something that's crisp and clear and direct. It saves them time. You know, if the writer looks at this from an empathetic perspective, if you're the one that's going to be receiving the message that you are about to write, would you like to have to wade through a lot of stuff, whether it's the lengthy preamble or whether it's bureaucratic blather, to figure out what it is that the message really is? The answer is no. Just if you would like to receive it clear and concise and crisp and be done, then strive your best to present it that way. And does it take work? Yes. I love a quote from Mark Twain. Mark Twain once wrote a friend that he didn't have time to write a short letter, so he's writing a long one instead. And I get this response often from students, whatever level they happen to be at, to include grad students, is when I explain that you've got your draft and you apply the word sculpting techniques, you reduce it by about, I don't know, 60%. And it's kind of funny. The response is generally, oh, I have to write more. Well, yes, you do. The flip side to that, though, is you have, if you're trying to make a case, if you're trying to make a point, you have just bought yourself an extra many, many, many lines to further reinforce and drive home your point. You've bought yourself more opportunity to seal the bid, to win the contract, to justify yourself or get a subordinate promoted. That space is valuable. And by writing with this methodology, that's how you make your points across and you make them powerfully.
I could totally see that. I could totally see the students doing saying exactly that. Oh, I have to write more. I don't know if I want to do that. But I love the other side of the point you bring to the table.
Well, I can convey that visually. If you imagine a white rectangle and then outline it in black, the rectangle is about an inch tall and 6 inches wide. Now, put in that white rectangle a big, fat, bold, black word, opportunity. So that's the time and the space equals opportunity in that rectangle. If you can think like that and strive to write like that, I'm telling you, it opens doors that simply wouldn't open. I received a great email, it was last year, from one of the senior airmen who was with me when I first started this journey 25 years ago. He said, "Colonel Bass, you probably don't remember me," and truth be told, I didn't. He said, "I wanted to let you know I kept that little handbook that you wrote for 18 years. Because of it, I got into officer training school. I retired as an officer after 20 years, and I'm now the vice president of a defense corporation because you taught me how to write." That's not a pat on my back. That's my using that as an example to explain that this writing methodology, the word sculpting, right to influence, what I've put out there works. And I keep getting feedback like that. And that's what drives me ever onward.
I love that. That's awesome. How do you help individuals learn to love writing? Is it the word sculpting, or is there other things to like get them to be excited about writing and those types of things?
In this book, in Right to Influence, I talk about Goldilocks and Rumpelstiltskin, and I'm going to answer your question with my Mary Poppins part. You know, Mary Poppins said in every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and snap the jobs a game. So writing is a scavenger hunt. How is it a scavenger hunt? After you've got the draft, then you go hunting and pecking and seeking for those wasted words, for the redundancies, for the fat verbs. So it's a scavenger hunt. That's fun. It's photography. Because you start off with kind of a fuzzy concept, but the more detail you add, the more you develop the idea, it comes into focus. So it's photography. Writing can be poker. It's a game of strategy. If you are competing for a bid or competing for a grant, or if you have a policy perspective, you would like your policy approach to be selected over somebody else's. It's poker in that you need to do some homework and know what the opposition is, what their points are, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then you can write to that in your paper. So it's a little bit of poker. And then lastly, it's painting, because as you add detail and statistics, that lends contour and depth and dimension to your product. It provides the reader kind of a mental yardstick to understand what you're saying. So if you look at writing from those perspectives, it's not a drudgery. It's not something that should intimidate you. It's a chance to tell your story. And using these techniques and strategies, you can tell your story well. And then it's a magic key, because it opens doors. You know, powerful writing often tips the balance between success and failure. And there are a lot of really good research ideas, a lot of good scientific and technical concepts that don't get off the drawing board because the brilliant person who conceived them couldn't convince the board that finances them of the benefits they offer. So this ability to communicate cuts so many ways and has so many applications.
Yeah, and I'm definitely seeing that. It's pretty impressive in how you explain it in so many different fashions to get even myself excited to write more. I mean, I write books, but like I was on a call with someone and we were talking about blogging and writing a blog. And I'm like, nope, that's not me. Don't like writing a blog. It's not my thing. And but seeing it from your perspective and how you share it, it's like, yeah, it can be fun putting things together and so much more.
Yep.
Now,
we're all storytellers.
That's what I was just about to ask. How much does the story, you know, is it all about just getting the story out of you into writing? And does that create the influence in a sense? Or what do you think about that? Or what's your thoughts on that?
No, the story itself, the idea, doesn't by itself influence. And I'll go back to the examples of the research and development and the brilliant ideas on the drawing board. No matter how brilliant that idea is, if you don't craft it in such a way, if you don't present it in a way that the audience understands, which is another key point, is know the audience, know what the audience understands about your topic, know what language they speak, and pitch it to them in a way that they will grasp it. But it all depends on how you present the message, and the more tools that you can bring to bear, the more you understand the audience and what it needs. Again, empathy is a big player here. Then the more influential you'll be in delivering it. Chapter 2 of the book is The Psychology of the Catch. I love that. And I have a cartoon of a fisherman, doing his thing off of a rowboat. The number one cardinal rule in writing is know the audience. What's the background? What are their desires? What are their needs? Don't talk above their heads. On the other side, don't talk so elementary, in such elementary terms that you're going to alienate them. You've got to target. The fisherman knows the type of fish. He knows the feeding habits. He knows the location. He knows how weather is going to impact the fish. You need to have a similarly focused beeline on the audience so that you can actually target it and make a spot on delivery.
I like that. I like how you share about the knowing your audience is huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like speaking two different languages. If you don't know your audience, you're not going to get your message across, and influence is not going to be there. Tapping into what we've been talking about, how then, you know, looking at like, you know, I'm thinking of the listeners. We have a variety of types of listeners that listen to the podcast. And I know a lot of them probably write emails. Is the same school for thought going into emails as it is other types of writing and so forth?
Oh, yes. I have an entire chapter on email. Now, I wish I could see your audience right now. I'd ask them, raise your hands if you are frustrated that people often, A, don't read your email, or B, only answer one or two of your three or four points. I can see the hands raised all over your broadcasting area. So the tips on email. First of all, it's triaging. I have a slide in my workshop where I ask the audience, the participants, to actually raise your hands when I read this and I lose you. So I start, and these are based on real email. Blah, 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 up go the hands. The problem is that the bottom third of the email says, the new CEO is going to come visit you, you're a division chief, and he wants a briefing on A, B, C, D, and E. But you didn't know that because it was such a poorly written email. You tuned it out, and guess who's in trouble? The person who wrote the bad email, or you, because the boss is coming and you didn't know it. So with the triage, you leverage the title of the email, if there's an action, say action, colon, and what it is. So right off the bat, you've got the individual's attention. I'm listening to you. I owe you something. And then it's the triage. I say, dear so-and-so, action, dot, dot, due date, dot, dot, and then comes the background, dot, 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 dot. So it's the horse before the cart. It's get the golden nuggets up front, and then comes all the background information. And another tip I have is, if you have two or three points, tell the reader that in the opening line. Dear Jane, three quick questions. Three, bold three, quick questions, and then number them. One, period, two, period, three, period, to help walk the recipient through your thought process. So the more you can make it easy for the reader to digest, the greater likelihood you'll have in having them respond to all of your points.
I love that. I think that's huge. There's some stuff I'm like, oh yeah, I write emails a certain way. It's like that. I should do that. It's easy. That makes it so much more simple. And sometimes I've heard advice talking about, like, when it comes to giving a direction, you want to be able to have a second grader be able to look at the direction and follow it. And if they can do that, then you've gotten it to a level where you're good.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like
that. And just remember, that's exactly right. But primarily for the emails, remember, people are friggin' busy out there. So as few words, and you're not being rude. Yeah, I think that's a big driving factor. People are just, they don't want to offend. Well, it's not offensive if you are concise and precise and put it out there. Another thing I laugh about is, for me, in an email, the biggest conversation killer is, dear Jane, thank you for blah, blah, blah. Because my visceral response to a dear Jane, thank you for blah, blah, my response is, you're welcome. And I close the email and I go off and do something else. But if there is a point that you need to make or something else that you're requesting, in lines that follow that, dear Carla, dear Jane, thank you for blah, 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 well, you've lost the reader. So flip it. Dear Jane, I need to ask a favor. Can you please blah, 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 blah? And then thank you so much for what you did before. So it's what you present first.
I like that. That's smart. And it gets it again, golden nugget right up front. Get that out there first everything else. Does that also play in a role shifting from emails into like resumes? Is it the same kind of strategy, or is there something a little different with that?
No, all of this stuff applies to resumes too, and there just happens to be an entire chapter in the book, Right to Influence, on resumes as well. So with resumes, the opening two lines on the tip top of the page are the most important. Before I explain why, look at it from the job owner's perspective, the company to whom you are applying. Don't have the resume so focused on me, and that seems counterintuitive, but pitch it in, how can I help you? This is how I can help you. So in those opening two lines at the top of the first page, what is it that you bring to the company? I bring the ability to help you. How can I further your mission? As opposed to, here are my skill sets, and you're beating your chest. It's, how can I help you? You can benefit by hiring me, because this is what I do. So it's a flip of the mindset. Then a mistake that so many people make in resumes, I'm looking for, the bullets. Use hard-hitting action verbs for the bullets instead of provided, responsible for, assisted, coordinated. All of those verbs that I just mentioned only beg the question, how or what did you really do? Instead of implemented, masterminded, led, initiated, things that are more descriptive, more forward moving, not so passive. And then the other thing I mentioned on resumes, I see this so very often, is if you start, and this goes to any list, not just resumes, so this goes to all bulleted lists. If you start off with a verb, start each one of those bullets with a verb. And if you start them with a verb, please make sure they're in the same tense. So provide, and I don't like that. Assists, I'm stumbling here for verbs, but make them all past tense or make them all present tense, but don't mix the tenses. And on other lists, not in resumes, if you start a bulleted list off with a noun, make them all nouns. Don't flip between nouns and verbs. Are you tracking with me on that?
No, I'm totally with you on that. That makes perfect sense.
Otherwise, you end up with a rhythm that snags. And if the rhythm snags, like a car that's not making it from second to third gear, you run the risk of losing the reader. Whatever you write, you want it to go down absolutely smooth as silk down the gullet into the reader's brains with no distraction and no snags.
That makes perfect sense. And I was kind of thinking about it when you're talking about the resume, when they talk about their skill sets right up on the top, and being a business owner, that's the one thing I'm looking for. Like, are they talking about what they can do for us, or are they just going to share their skill sets? And when I see that, I'm like, okay, this is, but maybe someone will think about it. But when I see, I know I can help establish the value of this, of the business, and we can do this. And I'm like, okay, this, their thought process is team. I like, because that's how I take it. When they're looking at it from there, it's like, yep. Oh, this is team. I'm with you now. All right. Then let me look at what else they have here.
Yep.
So yep. I can totally.
Oh, exactly. And this, the same thing with resumes, about the psychology of the catch. To do a very well-written resume, one has to research what's the company, what are the company's values, its goals, its objectives, who are its customers. You have to know who you're targeting, and then you can tailor the resume more specifically and stand a better shot at least getting an interview.
So true. Normally when people come on and they have written a book, I always love asking this question. And that is, when you wrote the book, who were you writing the book for?
That's the beauty of this book. It applies to so many people. It applies to the folks in the workplace, because, I still work for the government. So I see this bureaucratic blather. It drives me nuts. So I'm writing for my colleagues and the next generation of the workforce, coming into the workforce. I'm writing for college kids, because they're not getting this in school. And I've written it for the high school students who are looking at that college application essay. And the thing, the right to influence is written from such different perspectives. It applies to, it spans that entire wide-ranging audience. And I wanted to mention one more thing is, I'd mentioned it's lighthearted, it's fun, it's an easy read. The artist who's behind this for me, his name is Tim Newland. Tim is an American expat in Denmark who is a Disney-certified artist. And the most important picture in that entire book, this is when I wrote the first edition, came out in 2017. I needed a word sculptor. This picture, I can't tell you how important it was to this whole project. It had to have a character just imbued with lighthearted personality. So when I found the sculptor, I asked Tim, I told Tim what I was doing, and he actually custom designed the image of the word sculptor for me, which I am eternally grateful for. And then for the second edition, I have many, many more of his images in that book. And what's ironic about Tim is his job, he just retired, but he was a graphic artist. The cartoons were a sideline. He was a graphic artist supporting 5 research institutions in Denmark. And his job was to help these scientific technical geniuses convey their ideas to the people that would fund them. So Tim graphically did what I'm trying to do with verbiage, and that's help people communicate what's not so easily shared with people who are not the technical folks with that depth of scientific background. So that's just another couple of, you know, insights into the book. I wanted to share that. Tim is just fabulous. I'm very grateful to him.
That sounds pretty cool, especially taking that scientific type principles that's so left brain and then switching that over and bringing an artistic style to convey the message to a right brain. That's amazing.
Yep.
Now I may already know the answer to this, but first edition, second edition, why is it more, is there a difference between the two and why?
So there's a huge difference. Yep. Huge. And thank you for that. When the first edition came out in January 2017, I immediately began teaching workshops. I have developed so much new material over the last 2 years for these workshops. The second edition contains all of that new material. So I have what I call a baker's dozen, 13 tips each for resumes, for input to your own performance appraisal, for writing tips, for writing grants. The second edition has a chapter now on writing grants, on writing an elevator speech, on, you know, several new chapters, but it's all based on the material that I developed after the first edition for all these 2 years worth of workshops. So the workshops, I teach government agencies, corporations, NGOs. I've taught in master's programs in high schools. So this whole range of the audience that we've discussed, I've taught workshops for. And the workshops go anywhere from 1 hour to actually from 15 minutes, I laugh at that, but all the way to 2 full days. I have a client, I teach a 2-day workshop in New York and Chicago. But all of that information I've cranked into the second edition that was published last month.
I can't wait to dive into the second edition. Where can people find your book?
Thank you. It's online, Barnes & Noble's, Amazon, pretty much anywhere online, not in the bookstores, just online. And it's gotten wonderful, wonderful reviews.
That's awesome. And I can see why. I mean, the passion you bring about writing and, you know, influence. I mean, like I said, I studied a lot in influence with speaking, and it's just writing is now another avenue that I know I'm going to check out and how to be more influential in what I do. So I appreciate that and so much more. How can the listeners, if they want to contact you or get a hold of you or learn more about what you're up to and so forth, how can they do that?
Yep, thank you. My website is www.writetoinfluence.net. They can reach me, email me at carla@writetoinfluence.net. And I would like to direct them to the media page on that website. There is so much material available there. Podcasts, TV interviews they can watch. And at the bottom of that page, I think I've got about 20 different articles that I've written on a host of topics that have been published in various venues. So it's pretty much like an extra reading library, all available, just to go help themselves.
That is so awesome. I'm going to definitely check it out. I recommend listeners to do the same. Carla, this was a pleasure having you on. I definitely saw something in a different light and a different perspective and learned a few things just myself. And I know the listeners have also when it comes to being an influence of writing. So I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate the work you're doing and the influence that you're doing on many different levels to help people who are with resumes, essays in the college, corporations and so forth in so many ways.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, powerful writing changes lives, and it's the lifeblood for successful businesses. And I'm here only to help empower people to open doors for themselves. It brings me great joy to do that.
I love that. Well, keep rocking and rolling what you're doing. I greatly appreciate it, and I can't wait to check out your work.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. For past shows, please visit www.empoweryourreality.com. I hope this show inspired you and added to your life to help you on the journey to rediscover who you really are. To connect with us on Facebook, please visit www.facebook.com/Dr. Vic Manzo. Check us out on Twitter. The handle is Dr. Vic21. Follow us on Instagram, www.instagram.com/Dr. Vic Manzo. If you were inspired by the podcast, pay it forward by sharing it with someone who you know can benefit from it. Thank you again for listening to the Mindful Experiment podcast, sharing paths to help you rediscover your infinite potential.